This is The Pulse, stories about the people and places at the heart of health and science. I'm Mike and Scott. This story is from our episode, Up in Smoke. You can subscribe to our show wherever you get your podcasts. A book called The Easy Way to Quit Smoking sold over 20 million copies. Countless smokers say it helped them quit the habit, walk away, and never look back. It was written by Alan Carr, a former chain smoker. His basic pitch sounds somewhat ridiculous. You can quit, and it's going to be easy. And yet, his method seems to be working. Even though former smokers swear by it, basically become walking billboards for the easy way, physicians and health departments mostly ignored Alan Carr for decades. But that's been slowly changing in recent years. Reporter Jad Slaman looked into the easy way, Alan Carr, and what happens when the scientific establishment meets a man and a method they can't understand.
The Easy Way to Quit Smoking book started as a quit smoking seminar where everyone sat around smoking.
Completely smoke-filled. I mean, you kind of walk in and it's sort of fog as soon as you walk through the door.
That's John Dicey. He was a heavy smoker, as in 80 cigarettes a day, when he attended a London seminar in the 90s. The smokers would all sit around in armchairs puffing away in some conference room. You're meant to smoke through the whole thing. A practitioner would be up front, telling participants why they didn't actually like smoking and why quitting was no big deal. Every single practitioner has to be an ex-smoker themselves, cured by the easy way. The sessions were meant to be one and done, and the whole thing took about 5 or 6 hours. Somehow, after all the talking and smoking, you're meant to put out your final cigarette and never take another puff. It's supposed to be easy, and for Dicey, it was. He was so moved by the whole thing, he decided to quit his job and go to work for Alan Carr, the man he considered a literal lifesaver. Alan died in 2006. I wanted to know what kind of guy he was. Who just conjures up a stop-smoking method essentially out of nowhere and goes on to sell 50 million people on it?
It's very down-to-earth. He was born and brought up in what was at the time a very down-at-heel area of London. He described himself as a street urchin.
Alan had zero medical background, no psychology or addiction training. Before the easy way, he was an accountant and, like Dicey, a heavy smoker who wanted to stop. He saw a hypnotherapist who failed to hypnotize him, but it was at his appointment that he first heard smoking was an addiction. Something about that realization, that he was well and truly addicted to cigarettes, it hit some switch in Alan.
Oh, hang on, that's it, I've cracked it. I'm never going to smoke again.
The seed of Alan Carr, his easy way, is simple. It almost sounds too simple. You smoke because you're addicted to smoking, and not because you enjoy smoking.
It's still a hurdle for smokers to get over, because a lot of people think to be addicted to something, you have to like it. And that's simply not the case. The whole principle of addiction is it messes up your understanding of pleasure, enjoyment.
Alan figured if you understood that, you could understand that giving up smoking wasn't really giving up anything at all. You didn't so much quit cigarettes as gain freedom from them. Dicey says it was all about seeing past a kind of illusion.
An addiction creates a feeling of withdrawal. Once the drug starts leaving the body, that's an uncomfortable feeling. When the addict takes the next shot of the drug, that uncomfortable feeling goes. It wasn't there before the drug was taken. So it's that kind of, it's the illusion of relief.
One of Alan's metaphors was that smoking was like putting on shoes that were two sizes too small for the simple pleasure of taking them off every couple hours. If you just quit, though, that sense of relief, that's just how you'd feel all the time. And as for the terrible cravings that smokers tend to fear when they quit, Alan wanted people to think about them differently. Like, look, it doesn't actually hurt. There's no pain anywhere, just a kind of empty, restless feeling. It only lasts a few minutes, and then it goes away. Alan started small, essentially just quitting on his own and then telling other smokers at the pub the good news about quitting. Then he quit his job, set up his first Easy Way clinic, and started teaching seminars, sharing to him this profound revelation that you don't actually like smoking.
I think originally he thought that the conversation we just had would do it. That would, if he could explain that to every smoker, they'd just stop. And it's when he was starting to help other people to quit, he suddenly realized, okay, so this person's brought up this point. How do I answer that?
Smokers would counter him, saying things like, well, it helps me relax. It keeps me focused. It cheers me up. I enjoy all these things, right? Alan essentially gathered all these questions smokers would come up with, objections about how they really liked smoking, how hard it was to quit, and he matched them with talking points that had convinced real-world smokers otherwise.
You pick up a handful of sand, and each grain of sand is a bit of information that will help a smoker quit and find it easy to quit. And you throw it out into the crowd, and everyone grabs a bit of the sand. They might have 10, 20, 30 grains in their hand. That's all they need to get free.
Alan published The Easy Way to Quit Smoking in 1985. He wrote the book by hand, pen and paper, and his daughter typed it all up. It was self-published at first. Alan and his wife working around the clock, just packing and shipping orders before a major publisher came on board. Morning radio DJs started talking about The Easy Way. Celebrities endorsed it. It sold like crazy. Millions of copies. The strange thing about the book, though, is it's really, really poorly written. Like, that's one of the most common complaints about it.
Alan himself was no writer, and he used to make it quite clear that he wasn't a writer. But what he did was put the information across in a way that was effective. It was more important that it was effective than it was pleasant to read.
The Easy Way boasted about a money-back guarantee. That's how confident they were in the method. What other addiction service had that? Alan became a celebrity in England. He made a lot of money teaching his seminars, selling this book. But what he never could get was respect from the medical or scientific community. It wasn't for lack of trying on Alan's part. He wrote endlessly and enthusiastically to political and medical figures. Try my easy way. It works. You'll see. Imagine the lives we'll save. Mostly, though, he was ignored.
I think Alan rubbed too many people up the wrong way. I get it even now. Certain members of the medical community just don't want to talk to us. They won't even sit in a room with us.
There was this one trial in the 90s, carried out at St. George's Hospital in London. It was the first time the pros took a serious look, and it showed the Easy Way had some promise. But most experts dismissed it anyway. They said it was too small, too poorly controlled.
We didn't design the study. We didn't publish the study. It was nothing to do with us. To then have the study criticised and say, well, that's not good enough, was, okay. So it's sort of, I think that experience really did put Alan off.
Another trial was in the works in the early 2000s. It was bigger, with a better design, Alan Carr's Easy Way versus nicotine patches and gum. But then the hospital group conducting it came up with this last-minute ask.
I can't explain why the body that agreed to do a clinical trial comparing Alan Carr to nicotine patches and gum suddenly at the 11th hour said, no, we're not going to do this. It needs to be Alan Carr combined with Chantix versus nicotine patches and gum.
Chantix is the brand name version of varenicline, a prescription psychoactive drug that has a black box warning to discontinue use if thoughts of suicide or erratic behaviors are experienced.
If you're going to try and prove the effectiveness of a method, why would you mix it with another method? It's bonkers, particularly one that's governed by the pharmaceutical industry. It was soul-destroying.
The Easy Way is big on quitting without any drugs. It's got a particular grudge against nicotine replacement. Here's Alan Carr himself, again, from a BBC interview in 2006.
Substitutes that contain nicotine actually prolong the addiction. How can you cure addiction from a drug by taking the same drug that you're addicted to?
The Easy Way, at its base, most resembles quitting cold turkey. Dicey thinks Alan's hard line against medication and nicotine, it made him big, moneyed enemies.
The power and weight behind the nicotine industry, nicotine patches, nicotine gum, these are billion-dollar products, multi-million-dollar marketing behind them, which is truly the David v. Goliath sort of situation.
We'll come back to Dicey, the story of Alan Carr's crusade, but I also wanted to hear from someone on the outside who was around during all this. John Folds is now a professor of public health at Penn State. In the 90s, though, he happened to live down the street from Alan Carr, and he worked for St. George's Hospital. He ran that first small study on the Easy Way method, and he describes a slightly different Alan Carr.
He would, you know, and the media would say, you know, that everybody else didn't know what they're talking about.
Alan Carr famously didn't pay for much in the way of advertising, but John says he was really good at getting it for free basically by picking fights.
That was kind of a bit of his style. He called out everybody else. you know, nicotine gum and nicotine patches, they're bad, they're useless. The Action on Smoking and Health, which is the big anti-smoking charity in the UK, they're no good. The British Medical Association, they don't know what they're talking about.
He got into this one particular beef with a charity called Quit. They ran England's national Quit Smoking Resource Hotline, and they refused to refer people to Alan Carr.
They had a policy that they would only refer people to services that, you know, that had evidence-based treatment, but also that didn't make excessive claims about their success rates. And they started to butt heads with Alan Carr because Alan Carr at the time claimed he had a 90% success rate.
Nobody believed 90% was possible. Like, who is this guy talking all this trash? Quit commissioned the study almost out of spite, basically to call Alan's bluff.
And was he, I guess, what did you expect before meeting him? Was he, did he come off as like a mean guy?
I don't think he was a mean guy. I thought he was maybe a bit of a charlatan.
When John met him, though, he got two surprises. First, Alan agreed on the spot to the study. And second, it seemed like Alan truly believed every word he said. To Alan, the easy way really was gospel.
He kind of saw the light. And that was the thing that changed him and turned him into kind of like a born-again smoking cessation expert.
And the 90% success thing? Apparently, Alan had been basing that on the fact that only 10% of customers ever came back for a refund. So the rest must have quit for good, right?
And I asked him, you know, how do you get your money? What do you have to do to get your money back? And he said, well, you have to come once and try and quit. And if you fail, you have to come back again. And you can get your second treatment for free. But you have to come back and try again. And if you fail that time, then you get your money back.
The problem with that is it's just a lot of hoops to jump through. Maybe people felt ashamed about failing to quit and would just rather forget the whole thing. But Alan, remember, he's not a scientist. He hadn't really considered any of this. He saw 90% didn't ask for a refund, and to him, hey, that's evidence, really strong evidence. In any case, Alan was sure John Folds would come away converted, let him carry out his work and sit in on sessions.
I can't remember the exact number of hours, but it was a lot. It was like 4 hours. Somebody described it as a little bit like brainwashing you to stop smoking.
John says there definitely is some kind of active ingredient to Alan Carr, though he'd really only be guessing what it is. He thinks maybe it's something like confidence.
But in the corners of the room, in each of the four corners, there was a great big pile of cigarette packs. And so at the start of the treatment, the therapist would tell the people that these were cigarette packs that had been thrown away by the thousands of prior people who'd succeeded.
The person leading the session tells you it works. The pile of abandoned cigarette cartons show you it works. It could work in part because people believe it does. Like maybe the sales pitch is part of the treatment. The problem, it didn't seem to work as well as Alan was claiming. Something like a quarter of smokers were still not smoking at the three-month check-in, which is actually pretty good. That's about on par with the patch, other drugs, and traditional counseling. But it was no miracle.
Like, something that stuck out to me from your report that I hadn't realized is that Alan Carr also wrote a book that said, they called it The Only Way to Stop Smoking.
Yes, that was a modest title.
If you have a method that actually works 90% of the time, maybe you can get away with that. But if you tell people your way is the only way, that everything else is a scam or poison, and your method doesn't actually help everyone, that's where health experts had real reason to look sideways at the easy way. The organization has backed away from the 90% success rate, but they do think it's much higher than the Quit study suggested. How do you prove that? Well, it's really hard and really expensive.
Randomized controlled trials are no small feat.
I talked to Jamie Hartman Boyce, a UK researcher at the Center for Evidence-Based Medicine in the Cochrane Tobacco Addiction Group. In randomized control trials, one group of participants gets a placebo, one group gets the real thing.
They take a lot of resource, that's time, that's effort, and that is money.
The easy way in-person seminars are considered a behavioral intervention as opposed to pills or patches, which are pharmacological. Logistically speaking, it's more difficult to test the behavioral stuff than just giving one group a sugar pill and one group nicotine replacement. Like, what's the proper placebo version of an ex-smoker talking at you for 5 hours while you smoke half a pack? Cost is the second big problem. Trials can run in the millions.
Also, a lot of the research that gets done, for example, on different behavioral ways to help people stop smoking, gets funded either through government research grants or through grants from charities.
Governments and charities. These are the two groups Alan had gone out of his way to belittle and alienate. There was a case to be made. Alan got in his own way. The Easy Way basically needed someone in the big leagues, professional public health, to take a chance on him, to take the financial hit and do the work of a trial, and for years, no one would. But in 2018, in Ireland, one such scientist stepped up.
My name is Professor Luke Clancy. I'm a respiratory physician, but engaged in tobacco control research.
Luke treated lung cancer patients for decades. He was personally witness to hundreds of smoking-related deaths every single year. He also met patients who used Alan Carr and quit. How exactly did Alan Carr work? He had no idea, and he really didn't care.
You get to the stage saying, well, I don't care what's going on if they stop.
Patients stop smoking. That's good enough. He wanted to do that gold standard randomized control trial, Alan Carr's Easy Way seminar versus the Irish government's National Quit Smoking Program. At the time, it was online and in-person counseling with nicotine replacement and other drugs.
So we approached the Department of Health and submitted the normal applications.
And the Department of Health said no. Alan Carr's method was stuck in a strange catch-22.
We were dealing with an intervention that was 30 years old and yet hadn't got the scientific backing.
Just the fact that no one had taken it seriously in the decades it had already been around meant no one would take it seriously now. But as it turns out, Luke, he's kind of a big deal in Irish medicine. He went to his old pal, the Minister of Health, the guy in charge of the guy in charge of whoever initially rejected his application.
And he obviously doesn't interfere with those kind of decisions, but he had within his power to give money from the national lottery, which he did.
So the real deal randomized control trial finally went forward thanks to scratch-offs, essentially. Strict controls, hundreds of participants.
We found that the people who had received Alan Carr had twice the success rate of those that had done the national quitting service.
It wasn't 90%, but at 1 month, 3 months, and six, twice as many smokers were still smoke-free with Alan Carr than with the government service. So, of course, Alan Carr's method became a part of the government service? Well, no.
Not a lot has happened since.
There's still the big problem of how do you formalize something as downright strange as the Easy Way.
For instance, all of the practitioners of Alan Carr are ex-smokers who have used the method themselves. Now, that's not the way we behave with other diseases.
But Luke says it's a start. I mean, no one can legitimately say there are no studies anymore, that there's no evidence. For John Dicey, the Easy Way executive, learning more about the world of research and science, it's been a lesson in strategy.
My change of tack, as soon as I sort of became responsible for the organization, was not to make Alan Carr's Easy Way the only method of stopping smoking available, but to, as an option.
He thinks what happened to Alan, the way he was treated by the establishment, was wrong. And he still thinks the Easy Way is the best way.
But I'm not going to win a fight against Pfizer or Johnson & Johnson or Glaxo. There's no way I'm going to win that battle.
He realized he had to get diplomatic, and it's been paying off. The Easy Way is in talks with the World Health Organization about including the method in global campaigns. It's a reality Alan Carr could have only dreamed of when he died.
He was frustrated, described himself as a man in a hurry, particularly when he realized that his days were numbered.
The man behind the world's best-selling Stop Smoking book had been diagnosed with terminal lung cancer. I wondered there at the end if he was ever bitter.
No, not at all. I think he was frustrated about the method not being adopted by the authorities, that's for sure. He wasn't bitter at all about lung cancer.
He says Alan was sure he had bought himself decades of life by quitting. He did, though, maybe lose a few years hanging around smoke-filled Easy Way seminars for years after, helping others get free.
And he sort of said at the time, if that's true, of course it's been worth it, and I wouldn't change a thing. He was the happiest man in the world.
For The Pulse, I'm Jad Slaman.